This episode is supported by Active Skin Repair. Active Skin Repair is a skin health company helping people heal with natural, non-toxic, medical-grade ingredients. I just randomly, Vinny was having a toe skin irritation issue, and he ended up having this like skin that was really irritating him, and it was getting kind of like icky, and you know, like when kids start to get like little scabs and scratches and then they want to pick at it, and it was getting worse. And so Active Skin Repair showed up on my doorstep as a result of the sponsorship, and I got to put it to use immediately. And I got the ointment formula, or the like ointment formulation, and then also the spray, and the spray was perfect. So Vinny does not like ointmenty, creamy, lotiony things on his body, but I was able to get out the spray, literally took it out of the packaging the day it arrived, put it on his toe before he went to bed. And the next morning he was like, "Mom, my toe's all better." It was literally like this super amazing cure that helped his toes so quickly. So you can use Active Skin Repair on a wide range of skin issues, including cuts, scrapes, burns, sunburns, rashes, other types of skin damage. It's totally safe, non-toxic, suitable on all types of skin, even parts of the body where you might have rosacea or eczema or have acne-prone skin. This is also safe for the youngest members of your family up to the oldest. So now you have one simple solution for your family's skin health needs. With over 500,000 happy customers and thousands of five-star reviews and super safe and clean ingredients, Active Skin Repair is something that you want to have on hand for your family. So to get your own Active Skin Repair, go to activeskinrepair.com to learn more about Active Skin Repair and get 20% off your order when you use the code SHAMELESS. That's activeskinrepair.com. Use the code SHAMELESS for 20% off your order. activeskinrepair.com, code SHAMELESS. This is the Shameless Mom Academy, episode 823 with Tasha Shore. Show notes for this episode, including any links mentioned in the episode, can be found by going to shamelessmom.com and clicking on episode 823. Welcome to the Shameless Mom Academy. I'm your host, Sarah Dean. I'm here to give you and other passionate, driven, unapologetic moms tools, resources, and a little bit of humor to help you lead more positive, powerful, and purposeful lives every damn day. One of the best things about the Shameless Mom Academy is our community, so be sure to join us in our free private Facebook group to connect with other shameless moms just like you. You can find us over at shamelessmom.com/Facebook. All right, let's dive into today's episode. Tasha Shore is a shameless mom to three mostly grown sons, ages 16, 18, and 20, as well as a parent coach and the founder of Parenting Boys Peacefully, where she is on a mission to create a more peaceful world, one sweet boy at a time. She is also co-author of Listen, Five Simple Tools to Meet Your Everyday Parenting Challenges, which has been translated into five languages. Tasha works with parents to care for themselves, connect with their boys deeply, set limits lovingly, and play wildly. She's been featured on Dr. Shefali's Parenting Mastery Summit, Go Zen's Anger Transformation, and Listen Up Summits, and has spoken to audiences at the Institute for Child Psychology, the Diversity in Parenting Conference, and the Davidson Institute, Lawrence Livermore Laboratory, and she's been on a boatload of podcasts. She's been everywhere. So I met Tasha at an event where I was speaking, and she came up to me after the event. I was speaking about podcasting, and she came up and she was telling me a little bit about her show. And I was like, "This sounds really interesting. Please pitch me." And this is my favorite thing to do at conferences, by the way. Like people, if I'm doing a speaking event on podcasting, people will come up to me afterwards with questions about their show and any advice they might need. And as they start to tell me about their show so that I can help them, I am often like, "Your show sounds really amazing. Please email me and pitch me." So Tasha was one of those. And so she reached out, she pitched me, and I was like, "Yes, my audience absolutely needs this." So listen in to hear Tasha share her roots in feminism, her alarm in having three sons, and how she wrapped her head around maintaining her identity as a strong feminist and a mom of boys. She then shares how the feminist movement has left our boys and men behind, how the patriarchy has harmed women, obviously, but also most men, and definitely our sons, the importance of advocating for boys in spite of their behaviors that we might not approve of, why our boys need safe spaces to make mistakes, common mistakes that parents make in trying to stop our boys' aggression, such as assuming that the aggression will end on its own, or coming down too hard on our kids, or isolating the child, or trying to do all of this on our own, right? Because we think we can do it on our own, but maybe we can't. And then she shares her 5-step practice to stop aggressive behavior in our boys. I know you're going to love this conversation. It brought me peace and ease in terms of hearing how Tasha talked about how we raise boys in terms of the tools that she shared, but also just knowing that she has incredible resources out there and knowing that she is someone whose work I can return to over and over again as I continue to raise a boy. So having an 11-year-old right now and knowing that that's going to look different in a couple of years, and Tasha is a place and a person I can return to. So Tasha has multiple resources for you to check out. She has a course on Out with Aggression. She has a 10-day reconnect for parenting boys peacefully. All of this is mentioned in the show notes. So please pop over to the show notes and look at the resources that she shared. If you go to shamelessmom.com, click on the episode with Tasha Shore, episode 823. Everything's linked up right over there. And everything can be found at her website, parentingboyspeacefully.com. So with all that, let's go ahead and welcome Tasha Shore to the Shameless Mom Academy. Tasha, welcome to the Shameless Mom Academy. I'm so, so excited to have you here today.
I'm really, really honored to be here, Sarah. Thanks for inviting me.
I always love to let people know a little bit of context in terms of if I have a pre-existing relationship with a guest. And so I'm going to share with people that we met at an event, Mom 2.0. I was speaking about podcasting, I believe. Was it about? I'm like, wait, what was I speaking about? I think it was about podcasting. So at the end, though, you came up to me and you talked to me a little bit about who your audience is, what you do. And I was like, oh, yeah, that's a good topic for my podcast. And I don't even recall if you pitched me at that point or if you then emailed me later. But a shout out to people who see an opportunity, go in to make an introduction and position themselves well, and then go in for the ask. I so appreciate that. And I think that's how good business is done.
Absolutely. If you don't ask, you know, you're not going to get a yes.
Exactly.
If you don't ask, it's a no for sure.
Totally. And every single person, because multiple people came up to me at that event after being in that session and asked and pitched themselves for podcasting, whether it was right on the spot or later. And I said yes to every single one. So I think that people assume oh, it's going to be a no, or I'll feel foolish, whatever. It's funny how accessible things can be sometimes. And we make up big stories about this will never work. And so,
I think that's true about 99% of the things that we're reaching for.
Yes.
So much of it is just mindset, right?
Yes. And these weird narratives that we have in our head that these people are high and mighty and we're not. And the reality is we're all the same.
Exactly.
all the same.
I'm with you.
So we're going to talk today about parenting boys peacefully. And as a mom of a 10-year-old who, by the time this goes live, he will be 11. There's a lot to be said for parenting boys. And some of it I saw, some of it I expected, but a lot of it I didn't. I will say one of the things I expected in having a boy was a lot of energy and going to the park and having them want to jump off of everything. That's not the boy that I have. And so I have different challenges than I expected in parenting. A child who carries a lot of worry and internalizes a lot of things. And that's really different than the kid who's loudly screaming, jumping off the play structure. And so it's been interesting to me to see in raising a boy what I expected and what's coming out of this experience and how they're not very similar. And I know that you've raised 3, or you're in the process of raising 3 boys. So can you talk a little bit about where your boys are at and what inspired this work?
Absolutely. My boys are big. They all tower over me. They're 16, 18, and 21. And what inspired this work is them.
I was guessing.
So I grew up with my mom. We were a dynamic duo, and I was very steeped in feminism and the women's movement in the 70s and the 80s in the San Francisco Bay Area in California. And a lot of my life was about women's rights and fighting for girls, and I can be anything and do anything. And I was just thinking about this story when you just were sharing about expectations, because when I was pregnant with my first child, I one morning woke up and had this frightening thought, which was, oh my God, what if I have a boy? It had never even crossed my mind. And so what did I do? I called my mom, because that's what I did for everything. Call my mom, right? I still call my mom. So and I said, Mom, what if I have a boy? And she was just silent. I was just radio silence. And I was just oh God, it felt like forever. It probably wasn't that long. But then at the end, she goes, don't worry, Tasha, we'll figure it out.
Oh my gosh. And both of you thought it was impossible.
Right. Like it just like
there's no boys in this family.
Right. It just hadn't crossed our minds. Yeah. It hadn't crossed our minds. But I think part of the reason is because we have preconceptions about what that would mean. And so, yeah. You know, in your case, you had a certain preconception. And I think in our case, like coming from this pretty intense, like feminist background, and by the way, just to come clean, like I still could consider myself a feminist through and through, but there was some way that the sort of the movement was taught to me and experienced by me that set up men as the bad guys.
Yeah.
And so to think about then birthing somebody who was going to grow into a man was like, what am I supposed to do with, like, how can I do this? I'm like crossing over to the dark side. Like, what's going to go on here? How am I going to marry these two things? Because I anticipated, you know, loving my child. And in fact, I was head over heels for all three of my boys, one, two, and yeah. then three boys. And I had to figure out, like, how do I sort of keep this identity as a strong feminist pro-girl, pro-woman, woman, and pour all my love and advocate for these boys, sometimes despite their behaviors, which is like the how did I get into it? Because then they grow and they do things and I'm just like, oh my goodness, like this can't be my child. And it is my child and I have to figure it out. I have to keep loving him through it. I have to move through the shame.
It's so interesting. I was thinking as you talked through kind of those different stages, I was thinking of things that I've thought of in raising a son. I was also raised by a single mom. It was my mom, my sister, me. And so my sister and I both had boys. And I think we were both a little like, how do you do this? but it's been really interesting. And I think we both have sons who are really like they're big feelers and they're pretty in my mind, again, because of preconceptions, I'm like, are they exceptionally emotional or like exceptionally emotionally accessible? Which has been really, really interesting because it has been like really overcoming preconceptions. And then also carrying this idea of, I want to, like, I'm also would consider myself a strong feminist and I want to instill that in my son. I want him to be a feminist. Of course, when he was 3 years old, he had a t-shirt that said feminist across the center of it. but I want to do that in a way where it's not me just preaching about women, but it's like preaching about men and how feminism and masculinity overlap and that it's not just a woman's thing.
I love that. I mean, and this is the conversation, Sarah, that we need to be having because the truth of the matter is the women's movement was and is amazing and our boys are being left behind.
Yeah.
And we're failing them and they're failing. Their suicide yeah. rates are sky high.
Yes.
They are not keeping up academically with their peers who are girls. You know, they're not moving into the workforce at the rates of women. They're in a bad place. For me, feminism has become, what can we all do, any gender, all genders, right?
Yeah.
What can we do to bring everybody up? It doesn't have to be an either or. I think that as often happens with movements, like when it's a reaction to something or a response to something, it's like we sort of work within the same paradigm. And I think a lot of the women's movement followed sort of a very masculine, patriarchal way of doing things.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of, you know, it's this or that. It's black or white. It's my way or your way kind of a thing. And I think we're in a space now where we need to look at the gray areas. It's not yeah. black and white.
Right. And I totally agree. And I also think that this comes up a lot when I talk about the patriarchy. And depending on where I'm talking about it, I feel like I have to give like all these caveats because to your point, when we talk about the patriarchy and our children, our children, our partners, the people that we work with, it very much includes men who are victims of the patriarchy as well. It's not about like women screaming at men. It's how has the patriarchy completely failed almost all of us. It's allowed
That's
for
right.
a very select few people to be successful. And those are the people that have the most power in the world, but everyone else has suffered as a result of it. And that includes almost all men. And it includes our sons.
That's right. And I think one of the biggest ways that it has affected them is that it has stunted their emotional growth.
Yeah.
Right. We have yeah. not created space for men to have deep, rich emotional lives. Mm-hmm. And our little boys start out that way. They have these big, rich emotional lives. But so often we get scared because when they are nervous or anxious or struggling in some ways, a lot of times those behaviors those feelings come out in behaviors that are challenging to our systems and our structures, school, family, our pride, our egos. And there's a lot of fear because we're looking at a world where most of the atrocities are happening at the hands of men. Mm-hmm. And we're scared that our son is going to be the next one. Right? Yeah. So there's just so much fear. And then when our little boys, they feel that we're scared for them and we're scared of them, their behavior worsens and we just end up in a really hard place. So we need to get really comfortable with having our little boys feel, and men, by the way, I can't tell you how many women I've talked to who will say, heterosexual who will say, I wish my partner were more, were softer, were more emotional, would like share his feelings more. But then if he cries, she flips out. It's really uncomfortable. I'm like, well,
I didn't sign up for you to be like emotionally unstable.
Right. And you're like, well, hang on. You want this or you want this? Like,
right. This episode is supported by Nutrafol. Did you know that hair thinning will happen to approximately 1 in 2 women? If you're among them, you are not alone. Thinning hair is normal, but it's not openly talked about, so it can feel lonely and frustrating and sometimes even embarrassing when you're going through it yourself. Join the over 1 million people who are doing something about their thinning hair with Nutrafol. Nutrafol is the number one dermatologist-recommended hair growth supplement, with over 1 million people seeing thicker, stronger, faster-growing hair with less shedding. Oh my gosh, I am a heavy shedder, so if you are a heavy shedder, or if you are someone who's wanting to thicken your hair, I definitely want you to try out Nutrafol. I have loved using it myself, and I know multiple other people who've used it and have found great results. While many supplements rely solely on ingredient studies, Nutrafol clinically tests final formulations to ensure their efficacy. In a clinical study, 86% of women reported improved hair growth after taking Nutrafol Women's Hair Growth Supplement for 6 months. To get started, you can take their hair quiz on Nutrafol.com, which will give you a personalized health plan based on your special root causes. Nutrafol is committed to helping you identify root causes of any shedding or hair loss so that you can really start to rebuild healthy hair in a way that is customized to you. So take the first steps to visibly thicker, healthier hair. For a limited time, Nutrafol is offering our listeners $10 off your first month subscription and free shipping when you go to Nutrafol.com and enter the promo code SHAMELESS. Find out why 4,500 healthcare professionals and hairstylists recommend Nutrafol for healthier hair. Go to Nutrafol.com. That's Nutrafol.com, promo code SHAMELESS. Nutrafol.com, code SHAMELESS. This episode is supported by Air Doctor. You probably don't know that Americans take in about 20,000 breaths per day and spend an average of 90% of their time indoors. The indoor air that we breathe can be up to 100 times more polluted than outdoor air, according to the EPA. Indoor air pollutants can cause upper respiratory symptoms like sneezing, coughing, congestion, scratchy throat, and even more serious health problems like lung and heart disease. So what's the solution? Introducing Air Doctor, the air purifier that filters out 99.99% of dangerous contaminants so your lungs don't have to. This includes allergens, pollen, pet dander, dust mites, mold spores, and even bacteria and viruses. I am so excited that we just got our own Air Doctor for our house, and we will have it all up and running and ready to go in time for all the things that come with spring weather, but also smoke season, which is just around the corner for those of us in the Pacific Northwest. And I know many of you across the country. So here's how you can get your own Air Doctor. First of all, Air Doctor comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee. So if you don't love it, just send it back for a refund minus the shipping. Head to airdoctorpro.com and use the promo code SHAMELESS and you'll receive up to $300 off of air purifiers. Exclusive to our podcast customers, you will also receive a free 3-year warranty on any unit, which is an additional $84 value. Lock in this special offer by going to airdoctorpro, airdoctorpro.com and use the promo code SHAMELESS. That's airdoctorpro.com, code SHAMELESS. I want to talk about boys and behavior, because I think this part is really, really important. And I noticed this, and because my son is at this younger age, although this probably continues, you can let me know. But I noticed that there's a lot of judgment around how boys behave. And I'm thinking kind of specifically around like playground behavior. So pretty early on in a grade school setting, it is known, like, who are the kids throwing punches on the playground? And noticing this at my own child's school, I've also noticed some of the quick labels and judgments that are put on a kid that then get carried out via like the school leadership, via teachers, via peers. And there's reinforcement around, this is a kid who does this. This is a kid who's aggressive. This is not to like say anything bad about my child's school. This is just like, I think this is happening everywhere. And so, yes. So this is just like how we notice and label kids. How can we advocate for boys despite their behavior, and also really check ourselves when we find ourselves saying like, oh, he's the violent one, or he's the one that like can't control himself. He's the one that's kicking all the other kids.
Yeah. This idea of advocating for our boys despite their behaviors, I think, is just key. The quickest way that I've found to help parents be able to sort of shift their perspective is to think about your boy as separate from his behaviors. Now, I know he's not completely separate, but if you can think about it, like I like to sort of make a fist. You can't see me right now, but like I'm making this fist and this is my sweet boy, right? So this is all the yummy things. It's like he's generous and he's sweet and he's kind and he's thoughtful and he's cooperative and he's curious and he's all the things that we love, all the things that we know to be true about him. And I want to say to you all that those things are always true about him, always. Okay. In every situation, that part of him is always there. And then what happens is that he moves through life. And am I allowed to swear on this podcast?
Sure, go for it.
Shit happens, yeah, right? Just yeah. Shit happens. And some of that stuff, most of that stuff, we don't have control over, right? Maybe there's birth trauma. Maybe there's a pandemic. Maybe there's, you know, teasing at school. Maybe there's a separation. Maybe there's a death. Maybe there's a move. Like maybe, you know, you don't get to finish your Legos because you have to go to a doctor's appointment. I mean, there's big things and little things that happen, but they're all sort of little nicks in his sort of emotional connection and his feeling that things are good. And if there's no space for him to recover from those little nicks, they sort of chip away at the amount that the rest of the world gets to see that sweet, yummy boy underneath there. And what happens is that we get these behaviors that kind of glom on top. So, you know, there's fear that sits in, there's disconnect that sits in, and those lead to behaviors that are, you know, sort of not pro-social behaviors, right? They're like more antisocial behaviors, like these kinds of things that you're seeing on the playground. Mm-hmm. And then when we're parents are at the playground and we see this kid and he's, you know, pushing somebody down the slide, all we're seeing is that behavior of kid pushing down the slide. And we're forgetting that there's a sweet boy underneath there. Mm-hmm. And then we label, we go, oh my God, you know, he's the mean kid or he's the bad kid. And those labels stick and they lead to worse behavior and they lead to horrible mental health issues and isolation and all sorts of things. So it really is our responsibility as adults, parents, teachers, to interrupt there, to remember that underneath every, you know, kid pushing somebody down the slide or grabbing the toy or whatever it is, a sweet boy. And if we can remember that, then our job then is to reach for him, because in that moment, like, he's not sensing our presence, our love, our connection. Like, he's not feeling good about himself in that moment. We can be sure there's probably fear in there. And so if we can, instead of like focusing on, oh my God, what a bad kid, or, you know, time out right now, you're not allowed to play for 10 minutes, or all those things that just sort of add to the hurts that he's experiencing. If we can focus on reconnecting with him, reconnecting with that sweet boy that's underneath those behaviors, what we see is that the behavior shifts. So even I remember like once when my kids were young, we were at a playground and there was this slide issue, just like I was describing, sort of pushing down the slide. And it was a bunch of kids playing and all the parents are on the side, you know, sort of on their cell phones or talking or ignoring the kids. And, you know, we also are trying to have a life. So I get it. But sometimes our kids need our attention. And I noticed that there was this thing going on. And so what I did is like, I went in and I inserted myself in the play. And, you know, and I said, well, you know, what is going on here? Did I just see somebody push someone down the slide? We can't have any of that. But I had like, you know, a gleam in my eye and silly about
big
it.
Big smile, like big the, smile. The happy, positive mom.
Exactly. And like, I just started this game of chase with the kid who was doing the pushing and stuff. And he was giggling, which is a release of fears and stress, right? Yeah. And anxiety. And then what happened, all the other kids who were not wanting to play with him, came and wanted to participate in the game. And before you knew it, I had like the whole playground and me like doing this game and everybody laughing and everybody running, you know, and what? It took like 5 minutes and we played and it was fun. And then I went back out, you know, with my parent friends and the kids went on and were fine and could go back to playing. And so that's one way that it could go, but I could only do that because I saw a sweet boy underneath the pushing. I saw that there was a struggle happening there. I didn't label him because of a behavior that I saw.
I love that story. One of the things that happened with my child last year at the beginning of fourth grade, he started playing different activities at recess than he had played in the past, which led to some emotional escalations and some big feelings and him feeling inadequate and feeling like he was being teased and some things that just like are normal playground things. But it escalated to a certain point. At a certain point, he like got into a bit of a physical rumble with his best friend, which was like, wait, what? Like your best, what are you? The whole thing was just really different than anything we'd seen before. And I talked to the vice principal at one point and I was like, so are there like protocols? Like, what should I know about? What's the protocol for suspension? And I'm like, I knew we weren't there, but I also was really curious, like, what does this look like? And I was so grateful about his answer. Because in my mind, because this is what I grew up with, it was like a three strikes, you're out kind of a thing. Like, you know, if you do this once, we'll give you a pass. If you do it a second time, it's going to be like in school detention. And then like that there'd be like a chart for it. And he said, well, we don't really have a protocol. He said, every time something like this happens, we get the kids who are involved and take them aside and talk to them individually. And we see like, well, why did this person react this way? What were they feeling in that moment? What triggered that? Who else was involved? Like, and they basically like dissect the whole thing. And then from there, they can decide a course of action. And I thought, oh my gosh, like, this is exactly what you're talking about, that it's not about the action. It's really about seeing each kid in that moment as just a kid. And then what were the triggering factors in that incident?
Yeah, it sounds like they have some form of a restorative justice program in that school, which is quite progressive. And I will tell you that like even that three strikes, you're out kind of a thing, even that's not happening in a lot of schools. A lot of schools have like no violence policy or no hitting policy, no physical aggression policy, which means that a lot of times if boys are just even roughhousing or if they're having an altercation like this, which needs adult intervention and they need help, like there's no opportunity for them to grow and learn. Right. They're just suspended. And it's incredibly sad. It's incredibly sad because our boys need to be able to make mistakes. They, you know, when they're in fifth grade, sixth grade, seventh grade, eighth grade, fifth grade, like they're growing up. Their brains are nowhere near fully developed. They need safe space to be able to make mistakes and to have adults in their lives who will continue to love them through and guide them through the healing process and restoring and healing and mending the relationships with the people that they got into the rumble with to move forward. I mean, these are exactly the skills that are missing in the leadership in the world today.
Yes. Right? I love that you just took it right to the top. That's yes.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things, you know, we were thinking about before, I think we talked about before the podcast is just how parenting boys peacefully is related to world peace, I think. And to me, I think it's just, it's a direct line.
Yeah.
But I feel so passionate about, you know, my business mission is to create a more peaceful world, one sweet boy at a time. And I believe in that deeply because as parents of young boys, and particularly as parents of young boys who are struggling with behaviors that other adults or and other kids don't know what to do with, like we have an amazing opportunity to help them grow and to transform. If we just let it go, oh, the aggression's gonna, you know, it'll resolve itself, or we go like, oh my God, we freak out and I don't know what to do, or we let it go, like, or we let other people handle it in a more punitive kind of a way, we just end up with more of the mess that we already have. And all those fears of like, oh my God, is my boy going to grow up to be like this, that, or the other thing? You know, I don't want him to be. And we have these fears. These parents are coming to me and they got 3, 4, 5 year old. You know, I'm afraid he's going to be like, you know, the rapist, next rapist behind the dumpster. He's going to be, you know, the next school shooter. I mean, these are real fears that parents are having with young kids because we are so triggered by what we're seeing in the news and then the behaviors that we're seeing at home. But in fact, we have this amazing opportunity. There's so much we can do to help them.
Absolutely. That circles, I think, right into some mistakes that parents might make in trying to stop aggression. And because, and I think I appreciate you bringing up like that really severe, those very severe worries. And those are, like you said, very real worries. because those are big and severe and really, really scary, we probably have a tendency to react, maybe overreact or react in ways that aren't actually helpful and maybe are even harmful. So can you talk a little bit about some common mistakes that parents might make in trying to stop aggression?
Sure. I mean, one, like I alluded to a moment ago, is that we kind of assume that it's going to resolve on its own. You know, if the aggression is going to resolve on its own, then you won't be feeling worried right now. Like if it's like a little phase, then you're probably inside feeling, okay, you know, this little phase is going to go away and it's maybe been going on for a couple of weeks or something like that. If you have sort of a knot in your stomach and you're like, it's been going on a while, or yeah, I feel like my family is sort of revolving around this child who's struggling, or he's not making friends in the way that I hoped he would, or not being invited to birthday parties like other kids or something like that. Like, it is something that needs addressing. So one thing that parents do will is like, sort of let it die down. It'll resolve on its own. Don't do that. Okay.
Yeah.
Another thing is to come down hard. It's, I think, probably the most common reaction to aggression is to respond with aggression. And that aggression might be, you know, physical. It also might be verbal, yelling. And that just instills more fear in the child, which just leads to more aggression. It also causes us to feel horrible about ourselves because none of us ever want to do anything harmful to our child. We just do it because we're at the end of our rope, we're under-resourced, and we don't know what else to do. Mm-hmm. So we want to avoid coming down hard. We want to avoid isolating. So yeah, sometimes we have to separate kids, right? Sometimes we have to keep ourselves safe or somebody else safe, of course. But the, you know, go to your room until you know how to behave kind of a thing does not bode well. Okay. Yeah. It just sends the message that when things are hard, and it sends the message basically like, I can't really see that you're struggling. I can't see that sweet boy underneath there. You're just bad and you need to go like figure things out on your own. Right. To me, those two things are the most dangerous things we can tell our boys. Like, one, for them to feel that we think they're bad, that we can't separate that sweet boy from the behaviors, that we're confused as their parent. And then two, that we're sending the message that they need to figure it out on their own. Because yeah, if there's one thing that I want my boys to grow up knowing, is that reaching out for help when they are struggling is a noble thing to do. And there are many resources and many people who can help. So I don't want to be sending the message, you've got to figure this out on your own. It doesn't work, right? Why do people go to 12-step programs? Why do people go to support groups? Because we can't do hard things on our own. We're not built that way. We are social creatures. So isolation, I'm trying to think what else. I don't know. Those are some of the big ones, I think, in terms of mistakes that we make. I guess one other is like to try to do it on our own, because there's so much as a parent, because there's so much shame involved.
Yeah.
Right. There's so much feeling like, oh my God, did I create this monster? Like, what did I do wrong? And if I had just not done this, or if I had just done that, maybe this wouldn't happen. Or, you know, oh my God, what is wrong with this child? He's horrible. And we sort of fall into that thought pattern. And it's just detrimental to everybody involved. It's detrimental to us. It's detrimental to the child. It's detrimental to the relationship. It's detrimental to the sibling relationships of their siblings and to the dynamics within the family in general. So it's really important that parents know that aggression is a really, really common thing. Okay. Nobody's posting about it in their Instagram stories, right? Right. Oh my God, my kid just punched me in the face. My kid just called me a bleep. My kid just pulled the chair out from under his sister and she fell and we're in the ER. Like, nobody's posting those on their Instagram stories. But the reality is some form of aggression is happening in many, it happens in most families at some point and in many families on a regular basis. And so rather than sort of stay alone in the dark, shamey corner, find a community of people who are figuring this out and join them. Because only when we lift the shame and we can stop blaming ourselves or blaming them or blaming anybody, can we actually start doing the work to turn things around. And there's lots to do to turn things around.
And we're going to get to that in a minute. This episode is supported by AquaTrue. Having clean, safe water is the last thing you want to worry about. But unfortunately, according to extensive research by the Environmental Working Group, 3 out of 4, yes, 3 out of 4 homes in America have harmful contaminants in their tap water. So that's why you got to check out AquaTrue. AquaTrue purifiers have a 4-stage reverse osmosis purification process. And their countertop purifiers, which is what we have, take no installation or plumbing. And they remove 15 times more contaminants than ordinary pitcher filters. And they're specifically designed to combat chemicals like PFAS, which can lead to potentially adverse health effects like cancer, endocrine system disruption, and liver toxicity, which is part of what makes AquaTrue so special, unique, and important in terms of how they are able to filter water. They also have water purifiers to fit every type of home. So like the installation-free countertop purifier that we have at our house to higher capacity under sink options. They even have Wi-Fi connected purifiers and mineral boost options. So I'm so excited about our new AquaTrue. And here's the thing. I swear it's like a gentle reminder to actually drink more water every time you walk into your kitchen. So we are drinking more water now and also more clean water. So more water that is more clean. It feels like a double win. I'm feeling pretty impressed with us. I feel like sink water, tap water becomes invisible at a certain point. And when I see the purifier on my counter, it's like many time a day reminder to like, keep drinking, keep drinking. So I want you to check out AquaTrue for yourself and for your family. AquaTrue comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, and that makes it a great gift as well. Today, my listeners can receive 20% off any AquaTrue purifier when you go to aquatrue.com. That's AquaTrue.com and enter the code shameless at checkout. That's 20% off any AquaTrue purifier when you go to aquatrue.com and use the code shameless, shameless, aquatrue.com, code shameless. This episode is supported by a podcast I want to share with you called Understood Explains. So this show is about navigating ADHD, dyslexia, and other learning and thinking differences, which can be so confusing. And so every season of the show is around a different theme. So there's a season on special education, there's a season on ADHD diagnosis for adults, and the current season is all about IEPs. I love this podcast because the episodes are 10 to 15 minutes long. So if you are short on time or short on focus, you can take this content in super quickly, easily. It's very digestible. And the show is hosted by teacher and special education expert, Juliana Urtube. So Juliana talks all about how to navigate educational plans, IEPs. She talks about the differences between IEPs and 504 plans. She really breaks things down in a really clear and simple way so that you have some of those questions that you might be thinking around, like, does this pertain to my child? Is this something I need to be looking into? Like, where do we go from here? Where do I go if I have questions? Juliana has you covered. She explains so many different things and so many different little pieces and nuance of IEPs and special education and different things on Understood Explains. So I want you to go check it out wherever you're listening to this podcast. You can go listen to Understood Explains. Just go into your podcast app, do a search for Understood Explains, and it will pop right up. Click on it, pick your episode, and get the answers that you've been looking for and the support that you need around different learning differences and differences in school. I appreciate everything that you just shared. And kind of a common through line that I saw was that the mistakes that we often make when a child is being aggressive, whether it's verbally or physically, is that we dismiss them and their behavior because we assume that we miss the mark in terms of recognizing that they're suffering or struggling. And instead, we make this judgment, because if we saw a grown man doing this, we would make this judgment too, that they're doing something intentionally or because it feels good or because like they take delight in it. And I'm thinking through the situations where I've watched my child or a friend physically or verbally lose control, and
they feel horrible after.
Yeah, like they're never at the end like, I really got them good, that felt great. There's like an immediate shame spiral, whether it's public or private, immediate shame spiral. And that can last for a really long time. And so to your point of like being, ignoring the aggression or coming down too hard or isolating the child or not, you know, trying to just do it all on your own rather than engaging resources is only going to further exacerbate that, because you're taking a child who's already struggling and then you're letting them struggle more or creating more space for them to continue to struggle rather than acknowledging, oh, you're really struggling with something. Something's really hard right now. And that's what's underlying here, not that you just took so much joy in punching yes. your friend at recess.
No. Your sweet boy never wants to hurt anybody else, ever. If he does that, he's coming from a place of struggle. You must know that, right? You must know that. And that it's only that from that perspective that we can switch from the can't to, I'm sorry, from the won't to the can't mindset. And what I mean by that is, like, a lot of times when our boys are aggressive, we think like, oh, you know, I've told him 50 times to stop hitting his sister and he just won't stop. He just insists on doing it, right? He's not trying to do that. He doesn't want to do it. In fact, he wants desperately to stop, but he can't. And so it's our job as the parent to figure out, why is that so hard for him? What is going on in here? And how can I support him to move beyond that aggression and find other ways to communicate what's going on?
And when you're in those moments, for it to be a moment of like, oh, wait, this is a signal that I need to do more work as a parent. Like, that's just a lot to take in this moment. But
it is.
To your point, like, that's where the responsibility lies.
Yeah.
And that's a lot. Like, you don't necessarily want your child to have to do all this work either, but you're like, oh my gosh, this means like more on my plate.
I get it. But I mean, I'm going to be 100% honest with parents all the time. And the reality is we cannot control another human being, not our child, not our partner, not our friend, nobody. The only people we can control is ourselves, right? The only person we can control is ourselves. Yeah. So we have to, in order to help kids who are struggling this way, we have to let go of the temptation to try to control that child and instead focus on tools of connection to help them be able to behave in more pro-social ways.
I love that. I love that centering around connection.
We have to do our own work. Sorry.
Yeah. This is why
I know.
Every parent needs to go to therapy, right?
Yeah. I mean, like, I hope my boys go to therapy when they grow up.
Yes. Yes.
Right?
Same.
Like,
same.
Yes. We all need lots of support. There is no shame in getting ongoing support for our mental health. We go for checkups to our doctor, hopefully. You know, we need to take care of our mental health too. We have all sorts of crises going on right now in the world, mental health crises.
A friend of mine is single and dating, and she just met someone, and she was like, she's like, he's really amazing because, like, he goes to therapy and he does breath work every morning. And another friend and I, we were like, keep him. I'm like, nothing else matters.
Yeah.
So can you talk about, I know you have a 5-step practice to stopping aggression and supporting your kids when they're struggling with aggression. Can you walk us through that framework?
Sure. Well, you'll be unhappy to know that the first step
is parents doing their work.
Exactly.
Oh, damn it.
I know. I don't call it that, but that's really what it is. I call it setting yourself up for success. And it involves a lot of things, but the main thing is, what work do we need to do to be able to show up in what I call good enough parenting shape to help our kid? Because I can't, with integrity and honesty, say to a parent, here are, you know, 5 tools, 12 tools, 16 tactics to do when the aggression arises, and expect them to have success with those tools if they don't do their work first, because it's triggering. It's very hard. It's scary. It's hard. It's upsetting. It's all the things. And if we don't do our work, we react instead of respond. Mm-hmm. So the first step is really setting yourself up for success. It's like, do you need to tell people you're going to start doing things differently? Do you need, you know, it's like if you're going to go on a diet, you know, let's say you want to start eating healthier, get stronger. Well, if your freezer is, you know, stuffed with Ben and Jerry's, it's going to be really hard. Well, it would be hard for me because I like Ben and Jerry's, right? So like, if I was wanting to not eat sugar, I do better to not have the Ben and Jerry's in the freezer. So that would be something that I could do to set myself up for success. I would give away what's there and stop buying more, right? Mm-hmm. So there are really practical things that we need to do to set up our environment so that we can have success. A lot of shame comes up when these behaviors sort of rear their head in public. And often that public is like family events or, you know, around our close circle of friends. Like, what do we need to tell them so that we can show up and feel differently? It's like, if we're going, you know, I don't know when this is going to air, but maybe towards the holidays, you know, we're headed into holiday meals and stuff like that. Like, what a difference it makes if you know you've got a little guy who struggles with aggression and, like, you know, maybe he doesn't like Thanksgiving food and he's prone to, you know, saying, you know, this is disgusting, and you get embarrassed.
And you're
or
sitting at your great aunt's house.
Exactly. Or like, you know, throwing his fork or whatever. Like, the difference between going to that terrified that this is going to happen because it always happens and probably going to happen again. And setting yourself up for success by being in touch with that great aunt beforehand and saying, hey, you know what? My kid is really struggling right now with this, and I expect that this might happen. I just want you to know I'm on it. If it happens, first of all, I apologize ahead of time. I'm going to do everything I can to hope that it doesn't and assure that it doesn't. But if it does, I'm going to do X, and you know, you don't need to do anything, or I'm going to do this. And if you could just let people know that I'm fine and I'll come if I need help, kind of thing. Like, that's a whole different environment to walk into.
Yeah.
Right. The shame is much lower because we've basically said, I've got this. I'm aware there's a problem. I'm taking responsibility for everybody's safety. And, you know, I'm cool. If I need you, I'll ask for help. So all these kinds of things. So the first step is really setting yourself up for success. And then also, like, whatever support you need to work through what your triggers are. And everybody's triggers are different. Right. So like somebody, you know, called me this morning and their 9-year-old is doing lots of swearing. They're triggered by it. Swearing does not trigger me. I mean, not like I want my kid calling me all kinds of names, but like, it doesn't set me off. I can think clearly. I'm not triggered. I can think about like, okay, how do I want to approach this kind of a thing? She can't. So we have to work on whatever our triggers are so that we can show up calm in the moment. So yeah. So sorry. That's step one. But the second step is infusing connection. And that's really basically, you know, we talked earlier about like that sweet boy underneath and then the yucky behaviors kind of glommed on top. And we want to just infuse so much connection that we see more of that sweet boy underneath and that he realizes that we see more. It's helpful for him. It's also helpful for us. So, you know, I teach a practice called Special Time. And at the end, I'll give people a link to attend a reconnect that will walk them through that. If there are things that you do with your sweet boy that you laugh together, that you smile together, you have a good time, do more of those, right? We want more. When parents come to me, generally the scale is tipped towards many, many negative interactions per day or hour and very few positive ones, right? This kid is getting like, stop it right now. Don't do this. I'm sick of this. You know better. Why didn't you this, right? And not a lot of positive affirmations. We need to shift that because we can't change behaviors. None of us can change behaviors when we feel like we're being criticized and nobody likes us. And that includes our kids.
Yeah.
So that fusing connection part is really important. And then after that, I walk parents through playing detective. And that's kind of like the story with the Thanksgiving dinner. It's like, we need to go from, oh my God, this happens all the time. Woe is me. It's like, I can't control it, to, oh, actually, this happens every time I come back from a business trip, or every time he comes back from his dad's house, or when he wakes up first thing in the morning, or right when he gets back from school, or when his sibling is in the room, or whatever. I've been doing this for like over 2 decades. Like, there is always a pattern. When we can discover the pattern, we empower ourselves to be able to create change. It's another piece of setting ourselves up for success, because we move out of victim role and into a real empowered place of, oh, okay, it's not all the time. There are actually some good moments too. It happens in this environment, so let's make a plan. So that piece is really important. And then from there, we move into the sort of down and dirty of setting loving limits. And that's really my, you know, favorite and my sort of superpower and where I shine in terms of supporting parents. We have to get really good at setting limits when there's aggression there. And sometimes that's physical limits. Oftentimes it involves our body. We have to keep our tone up. We have to be really clear that we are helping that sweet boy underneath there. There's lots that goes into it, but setting loving limits is really important. So many families who've got a kid who struggles with aggression have their whole family revolving around this child. And it's exhausting and it's upsetting for everybody involved. And for the child who's struggling with the aggression, it's creating more fear, because for that child to feel that they have so much power is actually quite terrifying. And the more fear they're carrying, the more aggression is going to come out. So setting loving limits is super, super important. And then after that is play. So, you know, I say play like your life depends on it, because it does. Okay. So we need to not be scared about being playful. That example at the playground that I gave earlier, right? I could have come in harsh. you know better than that. How do not push anybody ever. That's dangerous. You could send him to the hospital. Come stand next to me right now. All the things, right? We've all been there. We could also be silly. We could also be playful. We could use play strategically to not distract. That's not the point in this particular situation, but to create space for healing. So laughter in this case, as I mentioned earlier, laughter releases fear. It releases stress. It releases anxiety. And so if I'm creating a game whereby this child who was pushing and in kind of a tight spot is able to laugh, his emotional brain is relaxing. He is able to sense my love and presence more and the acceptance of other kids more and the connection with other kids more. His radar starts to feel safe rather than threatened, and he is able to behave differently. So we need to learn how to use play strategically, sometimes responsively in situations like that, and then a lot proactively, just incorporating a lot more roughhousing and big play and laughter into our families. We're very serious. Yeah, so
there's so many things to do every day. We just it's all about getting through the day instead of
so
like
many
the fun part. Yeah, I love that. Oh my goodness. So I know parents like me are listening and have follow-up questions to all of the five steps here. Can you tell people where they can find you, where they can access resources from you? And then I know you have a resource that people can go access immediately for free, and then I know you also have a program that you run twice a year. So can you maybe share both of those things?
Yeah, absolutely. So the best place to find me is on my website, parentingboyspeacefully.com. I try to be on social a little bit, but I suck at social. I'll just put that out there. But I'm very devoted to my email list of followers, and I write every week with, tips and inspiration and little anecdotes and stuff. So go to parentingboyspeacefully.com, find me there. You will see an opportunity to join my reconnect. It's called Parenting Boys Peacefully, a 10-day reconnect. You'll just see a link that says join the reconnect, and I'll give you a link that you can put in the show notes for this. It'll take them straight there. And basically that will bring you straight into that infused connection step. That was step two of what we talked about. Just really ease you over 10 days into a practice of special time with your sweet boy. And if you go in 10 days, it's like 15 minutes a day. It'll take you completely, totally from reading to doing. You will see transformation. So it's quite amazing. And then in terms of the course, I teach a course called Out with Aggression, which is a 6-week sprint that I do twice a year to help parents, families who are struggling, got a boy who's struggling with aggression. And what can I tell you about that? If you're on my email list and you get my messages, and if you sign up for the reconnect, you will know when that happens. Generally, it's once in fall and once in spring. That's historically how I've run it.
Oh my goodness, so many good resources. So I'm going to link everything there. I'll link to parentingboyspeacefully.com and then the 10-day reconnect at parentingboyspeacefully.com/reconnect. And then if folks go and get the reconnect, they'll automatically hear about when you are opening the next round for Out with Aggression. Tasha, this has been amazing. You got to come back another time, because I still have like 27 more questions for you.
I'm happy to.
I know that you have another call in like 1 minute. So do you want to give us a one sentence on how you are currently showing up as a shameless mom?
Oh, I mean, I think really, well, a few things. One, I'm showing up as a shameless mom by continuing to feel passionate about this work and spread this message and this mission to create a more peaceful world one sweet boy at a time. Like that, I feel shameless about that. I feel excited about it. I feel like it's so hopeful and it brings hope to so many. So that's one thing. I'm also working on a children's book, which I'm excited about, which is fun. And I think, like, personally, my boys are growing up. My second one is moving out and going to college. So I'm shamelessly sort of fumbling through figuring out what this next phase of life looks like. And I don't know what it looks like yet, but I'm just kind of putting myself out there and open to whatever comes.
I love it. Thank you so much for being here, Tasha. This was incredible.
Thank you so much for inviting me, Sarah. I loved it.
Thank you so much for joining me in the Shameless Mom Academy today. I really, really appreciate you being here, and I hope you learned something new. As always, this conversation will be continued over in our free private Facebook group. You can join that group by going to shamelessmom.com/Facebook. Facebook to connect with other shameless moms just like you. Additionally, if this is your first time listening to the show, know that we are here every Monday and Wednesday with a brand new episode. So make sure you subscribe. Go to whatever podcast app you use and subscribe to the show so you never miss an episode. You can do that directly if you go to shamelessmom.com/review. That will put you in Apple Podcasts, where you can click on the subscribe button and you can also leave a review. If you scroll down a little bit, you can leave a 5-star review. You can write a few sentences letting me know what you thought about the show. If you let me know how the show has impacted you in becoming a more shameless mom, you might be nominated to be Shameless Mom of the Week. Also, please share this episode. My goal is to help more mamas be more shameless every damn day. So please do share this episode. You can take a screenshot of the episode on your phone and then share it out on social media. Tag me at the Shameless Mom Academy on Facebook or Instagram. I'm quick to reply and eager to send you Facebook love and love to be connected to all of you. So again, thank you for being here. I can't wait to be back here again with you in just a couple days. And until then, no matter what you do today, make sure you do it shamelessly.
When it comes to raising kids, there's so much to consider. Things like, what do we feed them? When do we feed them? How do they sleep? What does it look like to raise kind kids? How does their nervous system work? How do I keep myself calm? What are my triggers? There's so much that comes into play, and we are distilling all of that information for you at Voices of Your Village podcast, where we bring experts in the field of early childhood and education and psychology and across the board so that you don't have to comb the internet for information. You get to show up and hang out and have shame-free, judgment-free conversations and insights into what it looks like to raise kind, empathetic, emotionally intelligent humans. I'm Alyssa Blask Campbell. I have a master's degree in early childhood education. I'm a mom of two, and I am walking this journey right alongside you doing this work. Come hang out with me at Voices of Your Village, and we can dive into real conversations with actionable tips.